What's up?
Hey, folks, Jerry here. Welcome to the Pioneers of Insight podcast, a show that explores the wipeouts, crackups, and recoveries of inspiring and influential people. Here you'll get the stories of the quest to find success beyond the struggle and the great leaps of innovation that take us there. People that sound like this.
JLD.
What's up,
Jerry?
What's up, man?
What's up, brother?
Thank you so much.
Well, I'm excited to be here, Jerry. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you so much for having me.
Fun today.
Keep telling your story as well.
Yeah, man.
Was that from the computer?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
Today, we deep dive the life story of Scott Mulvaney, who quit a comfortable life to become a wildland firefighter after a whirlwind romance in Arizona. All right, strap in, folks, as we head into a story about desire and destiny. Enjoy, and I'll catch you on the other side.
I'm sure back then this was pre-HR. It's a different time.
I love graffiti. Eating.
Hey, Scott, welcome to the Pioneers of Insight podcast. Glad to have you here.
Hey, it's been an honor. How I show up today is I'm basically, like I just hinted at, I'm an open book. So whether it be posts that I put up on a social media today or content that I'm creating on the podcast or the conversation like you and I had, I want to make sure that I'm being as open and as transparent as possible in my personal and my professional life, because I wasn't always that way. So one of the strategies behind that is if people don't get me or understand me, good, they can go away. Because then I can focus on people that do want to work with me and do need my coaching or want that relationship. And I'm drawing the right people to me. That's just obviously over the years, I've just realized that's going to help me become an even more powerful professional. It's going to help me attract more successful financial contracts for my sales and marketing business and everything else. So
where did this step come in? The broadcasting and the decision to share your own personal brand?
The brand Live the Fuel was inspired just from my departure from the corporate world. And this was after I'd gone back to school for a degree in marketing and psychology, which I do channel into what I do today. And I did that as an adult student in my evenings and weekends. So that was my late 20s into my early 30s. Then I decided, well, I had this weird little inkling on the side of my lifestyle, and I'm like, oh man, this is something I found out about, and this is what you and I talked about. I basically decided the senior year of on nights and weekends finishing my degree, I decided to take a week and go to upstate New York, up to Long Island, New York, and study with firefighters who had actually survived 9/11. And I went to an academy there and got certified as a wildland firefighter with the federal government.
Hold on, I gotta slow you down real quick.
So we're hearing about your background, and it's going in a certain direction. There's the psychology and the sales and maybe the marketing stuff. But this idea of wildland firefighting seems to be a totally different road. So can you help me and the listener understand, where did this idea come in?
So out of transparency, this was all driven from the heart, actually. I had met a girl who was living out here. She was a really cool chick, man. She was from the West Coast. I've never met anything like her. And I was like, man, she's just so laid back, so cool. And I've never been out West. I've always been an East Coast guy. She started cracking that shell that no one's ever been able to crack on me. And anyway, she was like, hey, I'm going back West. I'm like, what are you going to go do? And she's like, I want to become basically an entrepreneur. She wanted to become a massage therapist. She really has always loved working on people and healing people. But she's like, I got to make some money to do that. So I'm going to go be a hotshot. And I'm like, what the hell is a hotshot? What is that? And she's like, well, you guys don't have them out here, but that's more of an elite level of wildland firefighting. And you got to be super, super fit. And yeah, I'm an adrenaline junkie. And that was like, wow, okay, she really just impressed me. And then she was moving. She went back West. She was driving cross country. And actually, it was funny because then she called me from Vegas, and one of her ex, like high school romances, she was supposed to go on a hike with. Like, they were adults now, just friends, but he bailed because his wife didn't want him going on a hike with her. She's like, I got this week-long trip in the Havasupai tribal lands of northern Arizona. and it's camping and hiking around their, you know, world famous waterfalls and blah, blah, blah. And she's like, you're fit and you're really cool. She's like, would you fly out and replace him? And I was like, done. Yeah. So within a few days, I had a flight book, took time off, and flew to Vegas to go experience this trip.
All right. So you decide to take the trip, but I need to know this for the sake of the story. What was your motive here? Because this is a key transition.
Actually, to see her again. Okay. So, yeah.
So it's love. It's love.
I'll be a slushy, mushy kind of guy. I mean, hey, I was looking forward to seeing her again.
So we're looking at what moves us towards bigger passion pieces in our lives, Scott. And I can hear in this transition, there's a lot working in your favor at this time, right? So you have a sense of identity, a sense of purpose. You have the wherewithal to create a plan. You go back to school. You kind of get headed in a new direction. But there's still something unfulfilled. And then this magical woman steps into your life, right? And she's got the sense of adventure and a bigger picture vision for her own life. And it's like the universe conspires to present this opportunity, and you take it.
That's it, man. I mean, up until that point, it's like, you know, carpe diem, right? Seize the day.
All right. Take us there, Scott. What happened?
Well, that was, again, it was an epic trip. Beautiful, crystal clear waters, massive waterfalls, hiking that I've never done in my life. It was just spectacular. Fast forward that, you know, head back to Vegas, and I got to fly home to the East Coast. I'm just like, ugh.
You're charged up, though, right? You're charged up.
Oh, my God. Yep. The energy was just exuding from my body, man. It was just a spectacular. For that being my first ever trip to the Western U.S., it just blew my mind.
Did you have a belief about yourself that changed after that trip?
Well, I had always said that I will do anything because at that point, I was already, you know, big time cyclist. I was doing 100-mile bike rides for charity, stuff like that. I was already like amplifying my fitness levels, and I'd already proven that I can work my way up from being a farm kid, you know, to getting into corporations and working my way up. And I was making more money than my friends coming out of college without a degree. So I've already had those little wins along the way, but then just dropping everything and going for that was just a life-changing experience in itself, because it's like, man, you just literally spontaneously took a week's vacation and bought a plane ticket and went somewhere you've never been to go on a trip you don't really know what's going to be like to with a girl you've only known for a few months.
I want to try to put this in a context that's useful for our listeners here, because there's a few themes that I hear playing out in your story that I've heard before in terms of my own work with people. And that is, when we're faced with the unexpected, sometimes there's an opportunity for new beliefs to step into our lives. Like, those experiences challenge us so much that we're confronted with the new belief, right? And an old belief has to leave, and this new belief steps in. And I think I hear for you, you know, this call to adventure with this amazing person, you're suddenly giving yourself permission to follow your instincts. Does that sound right?
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. I couldn't put it better myself. The instincts piece is what we're always kind of battling against. And sometimes it's been worded many different ways. You got to listen to your inner voice what you just said. I don't care how you want to word it. That was exactly what that was. It was like, I felt the energy build up for me just before I even said the word yes. And when that energy that came forth, I was like, I cannot say no to this. I have to say yes, because the energy was already building up inside of me. And I felt that, and I listened to it, and I was like, let's do this. So.
All right. So there you are. You're all charged up after an amazing trip, right? You go your separate ways. She goes to the West Coast. You go to the East Coast. What are you heading back to in your life at that point?
My corporate gig. I was, let's see, that was 2007. I was with an IT company, so I was doing sales and marketing. Oh, and they fired me. Yeah, I think they used that trip as an excuse to get rid of me, because the exact quote was, I didn't fit their company culture. Hmm. And the funny thing was, I literally lived next door to the founder of the company. We lived in that old Silk Mill loft apartment that I was telling you about, a complex. But I had come from T-Mobile, which was a bigger you know, call center entity. That's the company that I really had worked my way up into. But I decided that I just didn't like it anymore. And I'd been managing people in the call center world, and I just didn't enjoy it anymore. So I wanted to leave, and there was an opportunity that opened at that IT company. So I was there for almost 2 years. And I admittedly, deep down, I knew I didn't fit the culture either. I didn't like the VP of sales. It just, we weren't vibing very well, but it's still, you know, I was making money.
So what did you make of that moment? Because here you are, you step into this unexpected encounter, right? You're opened up to a whole new way of looking at life in yourself. And you come back and you're faced with not having a job. Did any of this seem coincidental to you or suspicious? Like, how did you make sense of that?
It was a crazy tug of war because it was just simply, it didn't make any sense, right? I had the vacation time. I was one of their top performing salespeople, and I am allowed to take the time that I require to do what I need to do. And everything was planned and everything was fine. But for some reason, things weren't going to work out. I'm like, listen, everything happens for a reason. Mm-hmm. Okay. At the time, it might've been a bit of a struggle, and I was definitely shocked. Even my clients and people that I was connected with, they're like, are you kidding me? They got rid of you. You're one of their best guys.
How are you able to look at that and go, everything happens for a reason? What is it about you, Scott, that you can do that?
Oh, initially, I wanted to knock the guy the hell out. But I don't believe in channeling anger and frustration and physical violence in a negative way.
So how long did it take for you to start to make sense of that after you got back?
Initially, I was pretty fired up. And it definitely reinforced me because I was doing everything right. While I was working there, mm-hmm. I convinced them to extend tuition reimbursement because I was doing that at T-Mobile. I had just started getting my degree going again. I'd gone back to school, and I transferred all my old credits from when I first, you know, took a crack at it when I was an engineer at Penn State. So I everything was moving. When I got that job with them, I was still doing classes on nights and weekends, just slowly taking my time, building the steam. And then my biggest concern out of that was, crap, that's going to slow down my goal of being the first in my family to have a degree. So unfortunately, I literally chased the next available corporate job that I could get that guaranteed tuition reimbursement. And that was literally out of strategy because I said, well, I know I'm not going to love the next job and I don't care. I'm going to use this to fuel the fire and to complete my goals. Because now at that point, I knew I'm probably going to become a firefighter.
Wait, how did you know that?
It just clicked, man. I don't know what. I was like, dude, I'm going to finish this degree. That's the other thing. I said, you know, there's a lot of things in my life that I might have only half finished. Like, I always felt guilty about not finishing an engineering degree at Penn State back in the 90s. So I said, fine, you're not allowed to go on this firefighting gig until you complete this big chapter of your life. Because then it's just one more chapter of success that I can use as a building block. End of 2009 is when I went to that class up in New York to get my certifications while in firefighting. January 2010 hit. I go my little graduation ceremony. I get my little piece of paper. And then I'm off to another academy in Colorado to do networking and take advanced hotshot level classes to try and land a job as a hotshot while in firefighting.
Okay, hold on. I got to slow you down.
So let me just pull the camera back just a little bit here to get a sense of like your background. And by background, I just mean who's in your life at that time that you're about to take this huge step?
Well, my mother, my father, my brother, my sister, but I live on my own. You know, they're over an hour away. Admittedly, at that period of my life, I probably could have been a little closer with my family. And that's part of the underlying things that I need to be more truthful about to people is that, yeah, especially when I then made the move to the firefighting lifestyle, I removed myself from my normal life completely. But I will say that they weren't completely thrilled about the firefighting thing because, well, hello, you're literally going to go risk your life and potentially not come back.
Yeah.
It's kind of, I'm sure like a lot of people have these conversations with their own siblings, family, you know, when people go off to war and they decide to serve with the federal government as a military professional. Mm-hmm. So, but admittedly, I was probably being a little selfish. To be perfectly transparent, I know I was being selfish. It was all about me, my new mission, and nothing was going to stop me. But, and meanwhile, I wasn't really taken into account how this was going to affect very, very close friends of mine, you know, which I found out later after I left and I came back. They're basically, when we've had these conversations now, you know, years mm-hmm. over the years, and it's like, yeah, it was kind of a dick move, Scott.
What meaning that you were able to take this step without just like communicating openly and directly about what you're doing, or?
Yeah. And also just not taking into account what impact I was. Yes, my parents were proud of me, but they were also scared. And I just brushed that off like it was not a big deal, because I'm like, hey, I'm in my 30s, for God's sakes. Who right. cares? Like, I know what I'm right. doing. I'll be fine. But not ever really feeling what I'm potentially having other people in my life now feel uh-huh. as I decide to leave. I pick up and move. Like, best friends of mine were like, all of a sudden Scott's gone, whereas I'm yeah. always here, right? Like, I yeah. literally, I closed up my whole life. I got rid of my townhouse. I purged everything of excess from my life. I became a minimalist. I crammed everything into 7 duffel bags, bought a $3,000 Subaru Outback, took 1 mountain bike, 1 road bike, 1 pair of skis, crammed into everything in the car, gone. I think if I really dig deep, I think even though I was like feeling high on life about taking control of my own dismissal and negotiating my own unemployment and finishing school and having that latest win, there was also a piece of me trying to prove something, obviously to myself and to other people. And I think that was some of the underlying factor there, was it wasn't just the adventure. It was also proving to myself that, hey, can you do this? Can you pull this off? It was scary as crap. I mean, but I was all in, man. I had to get it done. So yeah, there was a piece of it, me trying to prove to other people, but also there was some selfishness, like, hey man, this is just going to be awesome. And it's not, you're not sitting in a suit in a cubicle anymore. Right. I mean, what if you fall in love with this opportunity and you end up being a firefighter the rest of your life? I had no idea. So there was a lot of fear. But the beauty of it was, I felt like I just had to keep embracing it. And embracing the change and embracing the fear, and hopefully I'll come out on top. But there were still a lot of question marks.
Why do you think that was such an important mission for you at that time?
I worked my ass off working my way up in those companies over the years. So it's like, I've always been able to prove to myself that I could work hard and set goals, you know, earn promotions, you know, be in management, blah, blah, blah. Great. I've done all that. But that was doing what I thought was expected. I thought I was supposed to go and make good money. But then what was I doing with it? What was I doing with my life along the way? And this was the first opportunity where it's like, okay, Scott, you can go and make money, but because you're living in the woods most of the time, you can't spend it. So you can use that to wipe out some of your financial mistakes, which was always one of my biggest weaknesses as a corporate monkey, was I was trying to play a little keeping up with the Joneses from time to time.
Mm-hmm. They share one thing. They all need
and
money.
You take on a little credit card debt, and you're living in a place that you don't really need to live in, paying too much to live there and blah, blah, blah. And so that year or two transition was an opportunity to say, hey man, you have to sock away some money from the government because you're living in the woods half the time. And maybe you could start fixing some of these other mistakes that you've always hidden from everybody and try and clean slate that. Like there was a whole lot of life transformation happening.
So you step away from your life, the safety, security, maybe the exhilaration of competing, and you're heading into this great adventure. I mean, you're literally heading in the woods to fight fires. What was your first what the F moment? Did you have one of those?
Just the drive. I mean, the GPS on my phone taking me into the mountains, because I have no idea where Young, Arizona was, which is where our base was. And that was at the bottom of a valley called Pleasant Valley. And the crew I was on was called Pleasant Valley Interagency Hotshot Crew. And the valley was called Pleasant Valley, which apparently is one of the oldest family civil wars. Not the one you read about in the books, that I forget what that one's called, but apparently it's even older where this
was. The hillbillies? Like, yeah.
The
hillbillies. These are Arizona people. Yeah.
No, this is Arizona. This is a different. Anyway, just driving the roads, like leaving. Like I came all the way to like California, then backtracked through Phoenix. And then, okay, now it's my time to go into the mountains and find this town and where this base is. And just taking that drive, and all of a sudden the asphalt disappears and you're driving on dirt for miles, and you're going through canyons, and all of a sudden you're high and you're low, because like the base to the bottom of the valley was at 5,000 feet. So then I'm climbing into the mountains on roads that are basically look like forest roads. I have no idea what the hell I'm doing. So that was kind of like, okay. And then I get to the base, and I'm imagining like a military style base. I'm like, no, it's like this little base in the middle of Pleasant Valley, Arizona. And I'm like, okay, where do we live? And all the way in the back of the base are these two little shitty, like double wides that, you know, they're going to put like 20 dudes into. And I was like, okay, this is a life transition. I'm not going to have that loft anymore. Next day, I got there a day before. It was either a day or two early. And obviously, you get settled in, you unpack, blah, blah, blah. And you literally are living on twin beds. Good times. Anyway, so you show up for day one. And this is, and I'm a CrossFit coach nowadays, right? On Fridays, my free time. So I've never done CrossFit. This is 2010. And I was like, okay. And our one squad boss, I forget what tribe he's from, Native American descent. And he's like, all right, guys, we're going to go work out, go get changed. I'm like, okay, I figure we're going to be doing some PT, you know, some physical training. He's like, can we come back? He's like, all right, what we're about to do today is I study CrossFit as one of our foundations, so we'll be doing that. I'm like, I don't know what the hell CrossFit is. And then he's like, all right, and we're doing two-a-days for the next 2 weeks. I'm like, two-a-day? What the hell is a two-a-day? And apparently, that's a workout in the morning, then you come back and they kick your ass again in the afternoon. So this is after I'd already run my first marathon in 08, multiple half marathons. I even did a half marathon in Vegas right before coming to that base. Like, I was like, okay, you know, I'm fit. Hell no.
Having been through experiences like this, I know they're not easy. So what did you do that you found helpful to get through that?
The helpful was actually every squad boss, every piece of leadership that was there, everybody had a different personality, but I connected with like one or two in a different way. Each of them were different, but I was older. I was called the old guy. Like, I was the age of my squad bosses and everybody else was 18 to 24. So the hardest part for me was actually being humble and shutting the hell up. Because I had already been in management. I've managed 30, 40 person teams. I mean, it was like, okay, Scott, none of this applies. You got to suck it up. You're just a rookie. They took it right out of the military's book, man. It's like, we physically break you down and rebuild you emotionally, psychologically, and physically throughout this initial period of this 2 weeks. They called it critical training, but basically that's what it was.
Critical ass kicking.
Yeah.
All right.
That's why I chose Region 3. When I went to that second academy in Colorado to do some more networking, the superintendent that I interviewed with was from Region 3 is Arizona, New Mexico. Those two states are the hottest in the country. They have the craziest, weirdest wildfires ever. So when I found out that was the most dangerous part, I'm like, hey, if I'm going to do this, or if I'm going to be a hotshot, I might as well go do it in the crazy hot.
So we're headed towards the synthesis of what you got out of this experience, but this is too good. I gotta ask you to tease this out just a little bit more. Could you take the listener through what was a difficult day for you?
Let me think. I'll go to the hottest fire we were on. It was 115 degrees without the fire. So we woke up at our base, which was at 5,000 feet. It was probably about 90 degrees. Not so bad. But the fire, literally the desert was on fire. Like, cactuses were burning and shit. Like, I'm like, okay. Well, the best part is you can already feel the heat like coming through the box as you get down into the desert. Like, okay, it definitely got hotter. And when you step out, man, it's just like, wah! You just get hit in the face with all the heat and you're just like, oh, this is gonna be a sweaty day.
What belief do you gotta have in your head to get to move forward? Help us, because this is a strength of yours. So what do you tell yourself to move forward?
Literally just breathe. Just breathe. Like, the first 5-10 minutes was literally, actually, I'm not even kidding you, trying to change your breathing patterns because it was just so hot. And also then immediately trusting in your training and trusting in your leadership. Everybody gets assembled. Our squad bosses are there. And this is not their first rodeo. So it's like, all right, guys, like this is how it's done. This is what we're going to do. This is what we train for. Yeah, it's hot as balls. But, you know, it's just another day. He's like, so let's get out there. Let's hike out. Let's set up our line and let's start digging. I mean, because you got to dig fire breaks. And that's the only way you put out a wildfire. You can't drown it with water all the time.
What do you mean dig a fire break? Help us understand. What does that mean?
It's manual labor, baby. You get 20-man hotshot crew. The reason why these are elite hotshot crews, and even the Type 2 lower crews, they still have the same type of design where every man has a different, or woman, has a different hand tool. The front crew that goes in, the first, it's depending on the alignment that we needed to set up, it's either the first four or the first six are going to be saw teams, meaning one guy's wielding the chainsaw, the other one is his swamper, meaning you grab all the crap that he cut and you pull it out of the way. So the saw teams are always the front line, man. They have to go in and create the break. And then the digging crew comes in behind him, and you're literally striking at the earth. You have to take it down to sediment soil so no fire can carry through that break.
So how long do you do that for? This is a typical day you're taking us through, right? So
16-hour shift.
16 hours. So, okay, that's
I mean, to be fair, you take a lunch break or, you know,
break in the fire. Like, what do you do? Do you get in the vehicle and you go somewhere or what?
No, you take your backpack off and you stand on the green side and you pull out your sandwich or whatever and you quickly eat and you reload your pack and you go back to work.
So it's not like a break with a fan or a mister or you're in it. You're at an Arby's down the road or something.
No. So we even have to hike in with what's called a QB. So picture a cube, a box with a bladder inside of it, with 5 gallons of water in it, and you slide that on your hand tool and you throw that on your shoulder and you hike that in. Every crew must be self-sustained. So even every man's pack has additional metal SIG bottles of either bar oil or fuel for the chainsaw crew. So every man shares the load. So if you're a saw team, you're hiking with a chainsaw and extra fuel cans on your tools. The diggers are hiking either with there's only usually the real raw rookies are given the QBs or the ones who are strong enough to hike with a 5 gallon box on their shoulder. So you hike in with, and again, each of us already have 7 quarts of water on our pack, and we each have either fuel or bar oil in our pack for the saw team. So we have to hike in with extra water. So throughout the day, we're rehydrating our tanks and our 7 quarts, because that's where we have to go for 16 hours a day. You don't go back to the truck.
All right. So you gave us a typical 16-hour day. Let me try to just help move us forward. So I'm going to track where you've been. So you start out as kind of a mission-driven man. You're goal-oriented. You're in corporate. There's this call to adventure with this angelic woman, right? Very passionate. She opens you up in terms of your vision for yourself and your life. You make a drastic life change. You step into this position as a wildlife firefighter. You crush the experience. At least that's the way you're describing it right now. Where did you start to get the sense that it was time for you to move on?
Really, from that experience in that first season, I already knew that I will not continue this. It's been great physical experience, psychological experience, transformative experience, but I know that I was capable of more. This was the most adrenaline junkie thing that I've ever done in my life. And it's like, I was a firefighter, not even a firefighter, I was a hotshot. Like, I was high on life a little bit. Like I said, it hurts saying no, but at the same point, it also some excitement started really coming in, because I was like, oh man, there's a new chapter ahead. I don't know what it's going to be again, but that's life, man. We got to embrace change. We have to be putting ourselves into new situations that are going to scare us and are going to freak us out a little bit, because that's how we learn, grow, and improve. And if you're not embracing these changes, you're just flatlining, as far as I'm concerned.
So
So here you are now, Scott Mulvaney, founder of Live the Fuel brand. You moved out of that incredible experience. You had a ton of resources when you went in there. And I'm imagining that you gained even more. And from your story, it sounds like you did. Could you tell us what you would consider essential practices right now in your life and for your success, health, and happiness?
I'm pretty programmed with my health and my fitness. That's pretty standard. If you don't have the healthy energy, you're going to have a negative mindset. You're going to have a negative physical body. Everything is fueled for my health and my fitness. So every single day I'm either, always focused on my nutrition, or I'm having a shake, or I'm having, whatever, my vitamins, or I'm programming my workouts. That's my baseline of my life. Okay. After going through that level of physical fitness, I'll never lose that. I can't put myself into a firefighter role right now and do what I did then, but I'm still pretty damn fit. But then, like, every single day I'm getting up and I have a game plan. And when I go before to go to bed, then I now have a game plan at night for the next day. But now that I travel so much, I was like, you know what? I've had to move into more of an app-based thing. I love the Evernote app. I use it for so many things, not just for that. But the Evernote app is great because I can just say, I call it the days to do. It's completely backwards on the wording, but for some reason, the days to do. It's like, okay, well, that forces me to refresh it every single day. And all I do is I hit enter and I move the prior day's content down. So it keeps getting bigger. But then that way, if I forgot something, I can go back and look at it.
Well, how do you maintain your psychological edge, Scott? I know people in my own life that have had to make similar transitions from adrenaline charged careers into a much different pace of life. Like, how do you stay on your game psychologically?
I was just road biking yesterday. We did a 50-mile ride with a gentleman who survived cancer, and he started an event called Tour de Touche. So it's just kind of funny. Yeah. Or Tush, maybe. I don't know. Yeah. But anyway, he started it 3 years ago, so I'm probably going to sign up for that now. I literally just got his flyer yesterday. That's coming up in June, so I'll probably end up committing to do the Metric Century ride with these guys. This is how I create balance and challenge in my life. I love charity.
All right, big picture here, Scott. Where do you see yourself headed as you move forward?
I'm just excited for continuous growth, man. I admittedly, even though I have a game plan, I keep the plan wide open. That's one of my biggest things. Is like, you just want to set goals, but don't set your goals so tight that you're not free to experience other things that come along in life. Like, I didn't expect to sign up for these two things. Like, this just popped in. I'm like, you know what? I've luckily created enough freedom in my life, in my scheduling, that I can allow these things to happen. And that's what I kind of like teach and coach people too, is I'm like, guys, like, don't lock your life down so tight that you can't experience some of these other little pieces of freedom. You don't have to drop everything up and go become a wildland firefighter. I'm just saying, like, allow some adventure into your life once in a while. Do something spontaneous, for God's sakes. And like, I'm in talks to actually start possibly doing some more speaking events. That's one of my goals, to answer your question too, is that I want to get into some more public speaking at a higher level, eventually monetize that and get paid for the value of speech. Everything is under Live the Fuel. So livethefuel.com. And obviously the podcast, if they search anywhere on the podcast apps, is Live the Fuel, or they just go to livethefuel.com. And I have a player built in for every episode right there, because some people don't use apps, as surprisingly enough.
Yeah, who are those people?
I know, right? But Live the Fuel is everywhere, man. It's on Twitter. It's on Instagram, because everybody follows different content, right? So I do some different content to Twitter. I do some stuff to Instagram. I do stuff to Facebook. Everything is under Live the Fuel, and they can follow me that way.
Scott Mulvaney, thank you for sharing your time, insight, and wisdom on the show today.
You as well, sir. Thank you. It was an honor.
All right, folks, that's a wrap. If you enjoyed the episode, please leave a review on whatever platform you're listening to. This just helps put it in the hands of the people likely to get something out of it. If you'd like to dig a little deeper and see what we got cooking here at TUI Media, you can visit our website at tuimedia.com. Wishing you grace to fill your sails today. Stay great in the meantime, and I'll see you on the next Pioneers of Insight.
Done. But that's life, man. We got to embrace change. We have to be putting ourselves into new situations that are going to scare us and are going to freak us out a little bit, because that's how we learn, grow, and improve. And if you're not embracing these changes – You're just flatlining as far as I'm concerned.